Well, good Saturday morning, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Car Doctor program on AM 950 WROL, the Spirit of Boston. My name is John Paul, the Car Doctor, here to help you with your car problems on this Saturday morning, rainy, miserable Saturday morning that it is. But hopefully you're someplace where it's dry, without a roof leak or anything bad like that. So, but it's one of those days. If you're outside and you're outside working, I feel bad for you certainly. But it was a rainy day. In fact, it was a little bit hard getting to the radio station this morning. There was flooding. There was some road closures. There was a few other things going on. So, if you're looking for past programs, you can always find them on my podcast site, which is johnfpaul.podomatic.com, or just search Car Doctor Radio on all the various sites, Stitcher and iTunes and all that sort of stuff. You can find our old programs, and you can always listen to us on our app. Go to the any one of the app stores, Apple or Android, and search for WROL Radio. You'll find our app, or you can stream us online at wrolradio.com. But with us on the phone is Chris Russell. Chris Russell is from the Paragon Group and big doings down in Connecticut. Chris, good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to the Car Doctor program.
Good morning. How are you? Thank you.
I'm doing good. Hey, first off, Connecticut Auto Show, you guys have moved.
Yeah, new location, a new venue. So we've moved to the Mohegan Sun, and there's a brand new expo center. And we are going to be the first consumer show in that center. So we're excited to be in a whole new location. It's going to be one-stop fun at Mohegan Sun.
Did you just make that up?
About 2 months ago.
All right. and so the idea is you go look at some fabulous cars, and then you go out to the casino, and you win enough money to buy one, right?
Hopefully, actually, you can win one. There's a Mercedes CLA that's part of the one of the raffles that you can do through the Momentum program at Mohegan Sun, so that's
really
available. We also have some affordable supercars that'll be available, too.
What's an affordable supercar?
Well, I was starting to look through it all. It seems like the most attainable supercar in the world is going to be there.
Which is?
I just need to borrow $211,000 from you, John.
I was going to say, how much does Barbara pay you?
McLaren 570S Spider.
Ah.
Its top speed is 204. That's when the top is up. When the top is down, it only goes 195 miles an hour. But that's considered the world's most attainable supercar because of its price and its value and its prestige. But the other McLaren that's going to be there that everyone's talking about is the 720S. And that goes 112 miles an hour top speed.
Well, you know,
you need $300,000, so you better hit a big jackpot while you're there.
Yeah, you know, the McLarens, there's we'll use kind of general terms, around the corner from the radio station is Boston McLaren, and Danny DeSantis was on this program a while back, and he had one of his customers from New Jersey that brought four of his McLarens back to put on display, and I think when you added the four cars up together, it came out to about $3.8 million. So whenever you can see supercars all in one spot, but it's not just about supercars either. It's about everyday cars, right?
Everyday cars. We've got a whole over 31 different badges will be there this year, and everything from the new Toyota Avalon and Corolla, which have been redesigned, to the Chevy Blazer, which is an all-new product coming back again. If you're looking for trucks, there's like the GMC, the new Sierra Denali.
Yep.
I think there are three different trims there coming. The new Volkswagen Jetta. So there's a lot of interesting cars that end at the Hyundai Santa Fe and the Tucson. Those will be featured as well. So these are vehicles that are bigger, they're lighter, they're more efficient. They're computerized. The trickle-down effect has happened. So all these fancy luxury cars we started talking about, all of those technologies have now integrated into these everyday vehicles that we get to drive.
Well, that's a really good point, because it was a time where you had, I'll go way back, if you wanted a car with electronic stability control, you went out and you had to buy a Mercedes, and now every car has it. But now we're also seeing things like all of the advanced driver assistance systems, whether it's automatic emergency braking or front collision warning or all of those systems. In fact, Hyundai made some new headlines with this new Santa Fe that took the place of the Santa Fe Sport, that all of that equipment comes standard now.
Yes, yes. And that, when I'm researching these vehicles, I'm amazed at how many of them, all the technologies are now standard, where a year or two ago, maybe a different trim, you had to go up a level. Not anymore.
Mm.
And now, and it just seems to be happening faster and faster each year because manufacturers like Nissan, they have their own system that they've developed. Toyota has their own system they've developed, so they're just getting smarter every year, and they're happy to pass it on to the next model.
That's right. And now, and it's a personal project of mine now, I'm trying to get all the manufacturers to agree on nomenclature so we know what all this stuff is. So, you know, it's autopilot on one thing, and it's ProPilot on another thing, and it's, you know, driver assistance on something else. So I'm personally writing to each one of the car manufacturers, try to get them to agree on the name. And last I heard, there was about 250 different names for advanced driver assistance systems, and it's kind of making the world a little bit more complicated than it needs to be. But this is where
we're gonna need one of those Tom Brady cheat sheets on his arm.
Yeah, exactly, something like that. So yeah. In fact, I'm going to come out with a series about myself, like what's his called, TB12, you know.
JP what?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'll have to come up with some number. Yeah, but you know, the whole point about an auto show is there's never pressure, and as much as the auto business has changed over the years, still sometimes going out to buy a car isn't the best experience for people. But you go to the auto show, you're there just to look, and the people at the show know you're there just to look.
Actually, the people that are there, who are there to greet you in each exhibit, are trained professionals, either product specialists, and their job is very simple. It's to provide you with a personalized experience in a friendly, no-pressure environment.
That's
if you have a question, they're ready there to answer, and if they don't know, they've got an iPad in their hands, and they're ready to show you the answer.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing to me how much, you know, I'll be honest, I thought they were just all pretty people, and they were just there to kind of point to the car. But I remember going over and asking a guy who was standing there about what model Camry had LED headlights, and he just knew every trim level that LED headlights were available in. And it was just amazing.
The listeners want to have some fun. That's what you do. You go in there and try to stump them with a question. They light up.
Yeah.
They can't wait.
Yeah.
They want to hear the hard questions.
They do. Is there, you know, usually when you look at different shows like that, you know, occasionally you throw a celebrity in the mix. Any WWE wrestlers or any celebrities at the show this year?
There's a celebrity this year. So how you define celebrity, I suppose. He's a radio celebrity. He's the world's most famous limo driver.
Ah!
He's from the Howard Stern Show. Ronnie the Limo Driver. Hey now, yeah.
and you know, he is... he's also a big NASCAR guy. So he's actually is much of a, you know, goofball as the radio show is and all the other things. He's also a big car guy and a big NASCAR guy. In fact, he actually tried, I guess, on Sirius to do some kind of car program and found out it was more work than he wanted to put into it. But he is a pretty interesting guy. So, yeah, let's face it, you know, you love or hate Howard, he has, you know, a billion listeners. So there's a lot of people, I'm sure, who will go in just to see Ronnie the Limo Driver.
Believe it or not, Ronnie the Limo Driver has over 220,000 Twitter followers.
That's 219,100 more than I do.
So if people want to come on down and meet Ronnie, if they're fans of the show, they know what a flat Ronnie is.
Yep.
And like a flat Stanley. And so we will have some there that people can get autographed, and if they want to bring their own, they can. And also we'll have a copy of his poem, Winter.
Ah.
Fans of the show will know what that is, too. But Dean Cain, the Superman actor that Ronnie used his body for the his professional photo, Dean Cain will not be present.
Oh, there we go.
Blamer.
Okay. Yeah.
It'll be Ronnie's body there as well as his head.
And he's not exactly a young man either. I think he's almost 70, so...
He had a birthday actually last Sunday, and he's 69.
Oh, there you go. Okay. And also, you can't have a new car show without some old cars there. And traditionally, there's been an old car or two at every new car auto show. Anything interesting at the show this year?
There are three interesting vehicles that are classics. One's going to bring you back to your past. You ready?
Go ahead.
A 1977 Nissan Patrol.
Really?
Yes. I just found this out the other day. That's the only Nissan-badged vehicle sold in the U.S. until the early 80s, when the whole Datsun Nissan phase out. But this is cool. This vehicle, it was the second generation. It was the first vehicle to drive across the Simpson Desert in Australia, which is considered the world's largest sand dune. So this is a vehicle that just had worldwide appeal. Today, I guess you would compare it to the Armada.
Yep.
For comparison. But this is a nut-and-bolt restoration. It's supposedly very rare. I was looking at it because it was originally an auction item. That's the website I was looking at for researching this. It's a very rare restoration, so that's something to appreciate. And over in the VW exhibit, they've got two vehicles that have historical and cultural significance as well. There's a 1955 Beetle, which originally was $1,900 in 1955, and that's really the vehicle that started the Beetle phenomena. And that was sold, there was a dealership in Inglewood, New Jersey, and in 1956, how about this, the year after this vehicle in 55 comes out, guess what percentage of imported vehicles were Beetles the next year?
A lot.
65%.
Wow.
Can you imagine that? So this is the vehicle that really started that phenomenon. And then there's a 1958 Carmen Ghia. And that original price was about maybe $2,700. And that's the year that Carmen Ghia introduced the convertible.
Hmm.
So this is a Carmen Ghia convertible, the first year of that as well.
Those are truly historically significant cars. So for anybody who's an air-cooled fan or a Volkswagen fan, those are some phenomenal cars to go down and check out while you're there, because like you said, that started a lot of the craze, but also just the idea to be able to see something like that is pretty unique, and especially where I believe Volkswagen announced that this is the last year for the Beetle. So you know, who knows what's coming up next, but it looks like it's probably the last year for at least the Beetle convertible. So
this is your chance to meet the Beetle. Come on down.
Yeah, yeah. So it does make it interesting. It's funny. I was talking to an old time Volkswagen guy this week, and he was telling me he's been chasing one of the very, very first Beetles that ever came to market, and it was at a Volkswagen dealer here in Boston, and it was up in a storage loft, and it actually had cable-style brakes. So when you stepped on the brake pedal, it wasn't hydraulic. It was these cables that went to each wheel, and the thing was all rusted and frozen, and nobody wanted it. But I guess the dealership just sort of stuck it in the corner somewhere. It went down to an auction a few years ago. It didn't sell, and nobody knows exactly where it is now. So, you know, Volkswagens have a long and interesting history, and to be able to see one of the original ones, and like you pointed out, one of the ones that really started the Beetle craze in the United States, kind of an interesting story.
And when you think of Carmen Ghia, you think of a convertible.
Right.
Yeah. And this is the one that started that whole Carmen Ghia convertible. And also, the restoration is fantastic. So you can really appreciate the vehicle because of the way they've been restored. Also, something else. We moved to a new weekend this year. The Connecticut Auto Show is now Veterans Day weekend. And we've always had this offered in the past, but we're going to definitely amplify it this year. But if you're an active or retired military member, just bring your ID to the box office, and there's free admission.
Wow. Well, even better.
And if you have a guest, $2 off for the guest as well.
Wow. And so that's good. And so the show starts when and ends when?
It starts on Friday, November 9th at 11 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes through Sunday, November 11th to 5 p.m.
Well, and so it's, like you pointed out, a little different time. completely different venue, all new space, first show at that space. So that makes it exciting. It's at the casino, which brings its own level of excitement to it. So really makes it pretty interesting. And if you're not going to Connecticut, I don't want to say this, but before we know it, it'll be January, and the Boston Auto Show is coming up, right?
It is. We're working on that already. Yeah, all year.
And
also,
that,
with Connecticut, I mean, you can start, if you attend the show there, you'll get a hand stamp, and you bring that your hand around to the different show, to the different vendors, and you'll get different discounts at restaurants and stores as well that are at Mohegan's Sun.
So this is
like over 15 restaurants.
So this really takes the auto show from a destination to a destination and a whole entertainment complex. So, I mean, it used to be, you know, we'll go way back in time to where the Boston Auto Show used to be at the Bayside Convention Center. So you go to Bayside, you make your way in there, you go see the show, you have a great time, and then you go home. But now all of a sudden you go see the Connecticut Auto Show, and like you said, a bunch of restaurants, the casino, a lot of things to do. You could easily turn this into a Saturday, Sunday weekend.
Oh, very easily. In fact, what I like about this is that if someone's a shopper and they come into the show and they shop a couple of vehicles, mm-hmm. and their spouse or partner or family are looking at other vehicles, they can go off to another part of the building, sit down, talk about it, and then go back and compare.
Yeah. No.
There's no reason to leave the convention center and then you're done, basically. You're able to come and really shop, and it's a no-pressure showroom.
So does that mean next year the Boston Auto Show is going to be at the new casino in Everett?
No, we're at the BCEC for the foreseeable future.
Well, and the BCEC is a destination itself because there is a lot of restaurants around there. There's an awful lot going on around that area right now. So, and we'll talk again after the first of the year to talk about that show because again, that's a fun time in Boston right around then. But the Connecticut Auto Show, if people want more information, if they want to check it online, where do they go?
Please go to ctautoshow.com. It'll tell you more about ticket information, the hours. Senior Day is Friday. $8 tickets, reduced by $4, so an $8 ticket. It'll have the different types of vehicles, the show floor plan, everything will be there, the events and all the attractions. So all the information is at ctautoshow.com.
Okay, if I don't go there, just put a dollar on in a slot machine for me.
And I'll get you an autographed Flat Ronnie, too.
There you go. Chris, always a pleasure. Thanks for taking some time out of your Saturday and joining us on the Car Doctor program here in Boston.
Always a pleasure, sir. Thank you very
much
for having me.
Take care. Bye-bye now.
Take care.
That was Chris Russell, the Peregrine Group and the Connecticut Auto Show. Connecticut show's always been a nice show. It's been kind of a compact little show. Taking the same show and putting it in the casino footprint, I think, adds a different energy to the show and just makes it that much more interesting. And we do have some tickets to give away to the Connecticut Auto Show. We'll figure out how to give those away in a little bit. We've been giving them away pretty regularly over the past month or so. And for people who wanted tickets to the Boston Auto Show and won those last week, I have put those in the mail last week, so they're all good. And we're still looking for entries to win a gift certificate to the In Control Advanced Driver Training School. And all you have to do is drop me an email at jpaul@aaanortheast.com, and you'll be entered to win. We haven't gotten a lot of entries yet, I'll be perfectly honest. So you have a pretty good chance of winning the gift certificate for the In Control Driving School, and you can use it yourself, make yourself a little safer, give it away to your kids or grandkids. And on top of that, you go spend 4 hours or 4.5 hours, and you get an insurance discount on top of that, which is good for, I think, 5 years. So pretty good deal. Keith, why don't we take a break, pay some bills, and when we come back, we're going to be talking to Joe Peppertone. And you say, who's Joe Peppertone? Well, we'll figure that all out when we come back. My name's John Paul. This is the Car Doctor program. We'll be right back.
Mustang Sally.
Car Doctor program on AM 950 WROL, the Spirit of Austin, or 100.3 FM, either one. You can listen to us just about anywhere. And you can listen to us, of course, online at WROLradio.com or the app, WROL, the app. You can find us there as well. So there's a lot of places you can find us. I was at the AAA office yesterday, and I got talking with the people about Real ID and the documentation you need for it. And if you want Real ID, you need to go into the office with a passport or passport card and an original birth certificate. And it must be issued from the municipality and have a raised seal. Hospital certificates are not accepted. So you're going to need both of those. And then you also need your Social Security card or a paycheck stub that actually has your 9-digit Social Security number on it. There's some other things you can use, a W-2 form that displays your 9-digit Social Security card. If your name has changed and you don't have a passport with your current name on it, you need a marriage certificate that does have the name change on it. And then also you need 5 different things is what it comes down to. And your current driver's license, and then something else like a utility bill that has your name on it, a firearms card, a jury summons that's within 60 days old, tuition bill for the current year, some school-issued documents you could use. But you need you need 5 documents for this Real ID, which is not necessary. But if you do fly and you don't have a passport, you're going to need that. So it is important to have. The other thing is if you have, for instance, you need to go into a federal building from time to time. You need the same thing. So you need to have it with the little star on it, which makes it all work. So if you are going to do that, you need to make sure you have all your documents in place. With us on the phone is Joe Peppertone. Joe Peppertone is an artist, actually. He worked for Archie Comics for 20 years, but he also hosts a radio show down in the Carolinas, originally a nutmegger. Joe, good morning, and welcome to the Car Doctor program here in Boston.
Hey, John, good morning, and greetings from Wilmington, North Carolina. I'm sitting in the parking lot where our Cars and Coffee, which goes all year round, and I know my pals up in Connecticut and Rhode Island and Massachusetts get very envy of me during the winter months. But it's a beautiful 56 degrees. There's not a cloud in the sky, and it is an honor to be on your show.
Well, I don't know about an honor, but just to compare weather, we got about 6 inches of rain overnight. So if there was going to be a last Cars and Coffee event anywhere around here, I'm pretty sure it got rained out, as did every kid's sporting event this morning. So it's a little damp up here in New England. Let's start with you. How did you get into what you're doing, and what is it you do, really?
You know, my wife, Mrs. Pep, always asks that question of me. I worked 20 years in advertising. Mm-hmm. Grew up in New Jersey. Mm-hmm. Okay, grew up in New Jersey. Lived in Connecticut for 30 years, New Haven County. And I worked 20 years as art director of Archie Comic Books. And I always had a passion for, as my grandfather would call it, old-time cars.
Yeah.
And so when you do work at home, it's called freelance. So I would go to the car shows, and people would come up to me and say, "Hey, Peppy, can you draw my Mustang? Can you draw my Model T?" And this was back in the days before Hemmings, where I would do this all mm-hmm. the time. And then in July of 2009, Mark McCourt of Hemmings contacts me, and they said, "We'd like to feature you in your auto in our auto arts section." And I was dumbfounded.
Mm-hmm.
And And that's how the story started. It was they put me on the map, and it was up to me to push forward. And within a year and a half, even with the recession going on, Mrs. Pep comes up to me and says, if you like to quit, do so. And it took me 3 months to get the courage up because, you know, being responsible, mortgage, car payments, Mrs. Pep, the kids. And it changed my whole life. And in 2013, we moved out of Connecticut and down to Wilmington, North Carolina. And I've been featured in Hemmings 10 times with Muscle Car Daily Blog and Hemmings Classic Car Magazine, which is which the first one was October 2009.
Hmm.
And it just changed everything. So I always tell our audience, I says, our guests are inspirational on Every Car Has a Story, from the 14-year-old girl that is restoring a car with her father, to we're going to be having on Norman James, who designed the Firebird 3 and the Lunar Rover. So if that is an inspiration for someone that wants to, you know, push forward in their life, you know, I applaud that.
Yeah, no, I remember the original owner of Hemmings, Terry Eric. Well, I guess technically his father-in-law started it, but Terry always had this idea of you know, bring a kid to a car show, get kids interested in cars. And I always tell a story. There was one of the World of Wheels shows up here in Boston, and there was I don't know who thought this was a good idea, but there was, and this was probably it was probably 15 years ago, and there was a group of Camaro Firebird guys, and you know, you can stereotype anybody you want, but these were like, and then right across the aisle from them were a whole group of Asian hot rodders. So tricked out Honda Civics and all there was were these sort of dead stares between the two groups. So, you know, here's this kind of, you know, they both have their place, but you could tell at first they were really competitive with each other. They were, you know, we have big blocks. We have this, you know, you have these little four cylinder engines with, you know, turbochargers on them. And then at some point, and I think it was one of the Honda guys walked over and checked out one of the Camaros. And all of a sudden they got talking. And come to find out, even though they liked different cars, they shared the same passion. Whether it was the passion of trying to make something slower go faster, whether it was the passion of making something quiet get louder, or whether it was just tricking out the interiors to make them unique to their own particular car. And next thing you know, it went from a bunch of people staring at each other going, well, you know, look at them over there. The next thing you know, they're all exchanging ideas, talking with each other, hanging out together. And it's like, well, here's where the car hobby transcends, you know, all kinds of environments. And all of a sudden they became, you know, it turned into what, you know, it looked like it was going to be something from, West Side Story, and it was going to be a fight, and it turned into a bunch of people that ended up liking each other because the hobby that they liked so much brought them together. And I always thought that was kind of interesting.
Well, John, I have to agree with you 110%. This is the car culture, and it's the evolution of the hobby. And the old timers, you know, they believe in, well, you get your spark plug and you tune it up and you gap it and you do this and you do that. And with the tuner cars, they put in a chip. But the thing is, what it all boils down to is that they all have four wheels.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the next generation, and you cannot stifle it. And even here at Our Cars and Coffee, the tuner cars all are in one section. We have our hot rodders in another. We have the European cars in another. Now, I'm a member of the Antique Automobile Club of Cape Fear, and we have our, and so they all kind of stick together. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that I call Cars and Coffee, which I feel Wayne Carini is the godfather of Cars and Coffee. He started it all with the F40 garage in mm-hmm. Connecticut. And these are Cars and Coffee, and I know it's just like this in all 50 states. It's like the United Nations or the United States of cars.
Right.
You know, you have all these different blends, and these kids, they just want to show off their car.
Right.
Just like someone did 30 years ago or 50 years ago. They just want to show off their car. And we were talking at our AACA meeting, and I said, these are the kids that you need to have come into the club. Well, you know, from the senior members, they're not too thrilled about it. But the thing is, if you want your organization to thrive for the future, you got to let the future in. And to me, I applaud these young men and women that love these tuner cars. It's the way the industry is going.
Yeah, no, it is. You see, I go to a lot of Votech schools. I'm on some of their different boards, and you do see the tuner cars, but you also see the kids that are really into the trucks, and you see them into the diesel trucks, and you see them, you know, all of a sudden now they have a kind of a diesel that is putting out, you know, 650 horsepower, maybe a little overfueled at some point. You know, it looks like a 1930s, you know, factory smokestack, but amazing. Yep. The amount of power they get out of it. And that's their thing to do. And I, you know, there's so much room in this hobby for everyone to be able to, you know, do what they want. I was looking at a car the other day, and I just kind of looked down at the shifter, and it was some kind of 70s car, not anything in particular, but I was looking at the interior, and the shifter was actually a half inch ratchet that they welded onto the shifter handle. And just the idea that they you know, just kind of made it a little unique, a little bit weird, and just kind of made it fun at the same time. It just you see that kind of stuff. And so this love for the hobby now all of a sudden turned into, besides being an artist and drawing cars, now all of a sudden it turned into radio and Facebook Live, right?
That's correct. Now, Every Car Has a Story with Joe Pep and Dusty. We're heard on the Big Talker Radio, 106.7 FM in Wilmington, North Carolina. And you can hear that. We broadcast on FM, local FM, yep, here in Wilmington. You can hear us on worldwide internet radio. And in August, we started Facebook Live. And what I see with the Facebook Live is, and as you know how Facebook works, it's like once you post something, that just goes forever. If you miss a show, now you can see a Facebook show and see the cars that the car designer worked on, or the automotive journalist. Hmm. That the magazines, you know, we put these photographs up. Now, Thursday, we interviewed Mark Gessler, who was the president of the Historic Vehicle Association, live from SEMA. And we had Sean, who's the owner of the Bullet Mustang, and we're showing the audience, there it is. It's like you couldn't go to SEMA. Well, we tried our best to bring a good broadcast. What I also like about Facebook Live is that, you know, you get senior citizens, they can't make it to a car show anymore.
Right.
But if they have access to a computer, one of our slogans is, I had to laugh when you said it was raining. When I do posts, if you want to friend me on Facebook, just look for Joe Pep. It looks like a Pepsi bottle cap.
Mm-hmm.
And it's our car shows never get rained out, except for hurricanes.
Yeah.
Except for hurricanes. But the thing is that now you have a visual. Now you can see it. And I tell my radio audience, it's like, you know, radio is great, but if you want to see the cars, tune in on our Facebook Live at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. But this is the way the culture is going, and we have two guests per show. There are times like last week we had one guest, and we're thinking about reformatting just for one guest because 12 minutes is just not enough.
Mm.
And our show runs 55 minutes, and the 50th show was Thursday, and I was like, wow, this is just fantastic.
Yeah.
And it's getting better and better and better and better.
But, no, and you're absolutely right about once you post something online. You know, I try to do this in an educational way. Sometimes when I talk to younger people, I say, you know what the difference between, you know, YouTube or Facebook Live and True Love is? And they'll look at me and go, no, what? And I'm like, you know, YouTube lasts forever.
Yep, it'll be out there as long as there's these cloud centers that store all.
And for high school kids, they go, you mean True Love doesn't last forever? And I'm like, well, not always, but Facebook Live does. So you know, keep that in mind whenever you post stuff too. That you know, it may impact your ability to get a job at some point. So, it is interesting how the media has changed. And what brought you to North Carolina? Why'd you move from New Jersey to Connecticut? How'd you end up in Wilmington, North Carolina?
Well, we would vacation at Carolina Beach.
Okay.
And so we knew the lay of the land.
Mm-hmm.
We were at a point where it was an aha moment. You know, it's like my wife works in education. She's a sign language interpreter for the deaf.
Mm-hmm.
So she could work anywhere in the United States. I'm working up on the second floor of my home in my studio office, mm-hmm. As an illustrator. And the whole family were having pizza one Friday night. And it was like, you know, we could live anywhere in the United States or in the world. So the family says, okay, where are we going to live? So I chime in and I say, Hawaii. I mean, John, I had to throw that in.
Yeah, you have to. Hawaii's a good choice.
Right. And then, you know, it's my daughter goes, San Diego. And then my son, he's going, I want to stay right here. And the thing is that when that question is posed, it's very difficult to think, where would you want to live?
Hmm.
So after several talks, and this went on for like a year, a friend of ours that was, we've known since the 1980s, said, why don't you come on down Christmas time? Well, Christmas time was 60 degrees, and it's really weird seeing Christmas down here because you have your Christmas decorations, and then you have the flower called the pansy,
okay.
Whereas in Connecticut, we would plant them Mother's Day. They're out Christmas time, and it's very surreal.
Mm.
It's green down here because you have pine trees, magnolia trees, and a couple other species that does not turn or lose its leaves. So it's always green down here. 2 years ago, we had 80 degrees, and I think the Northeast even suffered from a heat wave, where it seemed like it was Christmas in July. That was weird. But we had that aha moment, and everything fell in place. The universe all lined up, and we moved down here in June of 2013, and I just love it. The thing I'm not too thrilled about is we live in an area called Hurricane Alley, and this was the first time we ever had to evacuate.
Mm.
But you know what, John? After everything was said and done, and Wilmington was rebuilding from the hurricane, and you know what? You guys have gotten hit with some pretty bad hurricanes in the past.
Oh, yeah.
Our Cars and Coffee from last month, we had over 500 car people show up with
their
cars.
Wow, 500 people at Cars and Coffee. That's amazing.
Yep, yep. We occupy a space that's there's a movie center And if your listeners want to look up Stone Theaters on Independence and 17th, and they can see a bird's eye view with via Google satellite. And we have room for, I'd say 700 cars if need be.
Wow.
But the car culture is very alive and well. And, John, what I noticed, too, is up north you see, you know, you'll see your Model Ts and your 64 Mustangs and you'll see your Camaros. I see DeSotos down here. I see Pontiacs down here. You know, more cars that you would normally not see.
Mm-hmm.
And I find even like I work for the Intermountain Concours Elegance out in Salt Lake City, Utah, back in 2011. And there you see cars that you normally don't see out east. So that's what's great about the car culture. So you go to different areas of the country and you'll see more different types of cars, and why I can't figure it out.
Well, it's interesting when you go to a place where there is that whole culture of cars. And you know, here in the Boston area, we see a little bit of it, but I know I spent a week or so down in sort of outside of the Daytona area, and just like standing on a street corner and watching stuff drive by, you know, all of a sudden I saw an Anglia drive by, and I saw, you know, I saw a share of antiques. But then you see stuff, because it doesn't get quite as rusty sometimes, you see some old stuff that are just daily drivers, which always seems real interesting.
Absolutely.
To me.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Last month we had a replica 1936 Auburn show up, and John, when that car pulled in, it was like, wow,
yeah.
I felt like I was at a concourse. And speaking of concourses, my radio partner Dusty and I will be going to the Trump Charlotte Concours d'Elegance in Mooresville, North Carolina, which is right next to Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to, and oh, I love concourse events, because these are the cars that thankfully they're not in the museum. I mean, I applaud museums, but when you see a car in its natural, where it should be outside, they're going to have a couple of cars from the Howard Hughes collection. They're going to have Fatty Arbuckle's Pierce Arrow,
wow.
1919 Pierce Arrow. And I can't wait.
No,
I'm doing Facebook Live videos.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's amazing when you can see certain things. I know. I mean, I'm the same way, and I also like it when I see cars that get driven to shows, which I remember I was years and years and years ago. I was at a Porsche show, and one of the Porsche family members was there, and I kind of said to him, this must make you happy to see a sea of Porsche vehicles here. And he goes, no, it doesn't. And I said, why is that? And he goes, most of these cars were trailered here. He said, my cars are meant to be driven, and people are not enjoying them for what they are. And the same thing, when you see a car at a concourse, that's great, but when you see them driven, it's even better. And I love it when they do some of these concourse events where the night before they take them out for a good drive, and you know, and if you happen to just be on a street corner somewhere and all of a sudden you see, you know, 50, 60, 100 beautiful classic cars drive by, it always just makes it that much better. But on the other hand, there are only going to be cars sometimes you see in a museum. There's a new museum that opened up this year in Bristol, Rhode Island, the Newport Car Museum, and it's a private owned museum. It's all the cars in it belong to one guy, and there are cars that I've never seen before. Some of them are antiques, and some of them are absolutely brand new. But just the idea that I've driven a Hellcat. I haven't driven a Hellcat Demon. He's like, oh, I have a Demon over here. You know, and the idea he had supercars, and he had a hybrid section, and in his hybrid section was a Porsche 918, which is a million-plus-dollar car. And there's no ropes up. You get to really, you know, get close and personal with the cars. And then there's fun stuff. The BMW iZeta, which they claim is the most photographed car in the building because it's such a fun little car. So, you know, just the idea that there are these cars that you can get to see, and whether you get to see them in person or, like you said, whether you get to see them on Facebook Live, it just makes it for a fun event.
Absolutely. And, you know, John, what we were talking about in the beginning of our interview is that, you know, kids are the future. And I always say this on my show. It's like, bring your kids to a car show. Mm-hmm. It's an outdoor history lesson on four wheels. So family members that are listening, take your kids to a car show, you know, in the springtime, or if there's something that's an indoor event up in the Boston area. Because when you look at a car, and let's, for example, we have a club member has a 1912 Cadillac.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, history lesson. Who was the president? What was going on in the United States at the time? When you look at a car, even the car that's parked in your driveway, you're seeing the top of technology for that model year. So our club member with this 1912 Cadillac, first year electric start, first year electric headlights. The year before, you would have to put these pellets in to mix a gas, turn it on, and then light the wick inside the lens of a headlight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this is all history. So when you see a car that's 100 years old, you're looking at something that was the top of technology. If our listeners have a granddad and they have an old 57 Chevrolet pickup truck, you're looking at the top of technology for General Motors for that model year. So it's bring them to a car show.
Yeah. And it's interesting. Yep. Go ahead. Sorry.
Go ahead. No, go ahead, sir.
Yeah. No, it's interesting too when you look at that. What was the top technology then? And I mentioned it. I mentioned it just the other day. I was driving a car that had a light that came on, a blue light that came on when you first started it. That meant the engine was cold, and really to take it easy with it until the blue light goes off, so the car can warm up at a reasonable rate and not cause any problems. And an old car friend of mine posted, that they had that in the, and I forget what exactly he said, like the 58 Oldsmobile. And I said, yeah, it's interesting how, you know, what's old is new again, except for me, it seems like. It can be something, whether it's automatic dimming headlights or headlights that swiveled a little bit, like everybody looks back
like
at the Tucker. Exactly, that had some innovative technology in it, or even just engine design in general. The idea that the four-stroke engine's been the four-stroke engine, and then you combine that with hybrids, but there were types of hybrid technology back in the 20s and 30s. It always kind of, you as you look back, you learn a little bit about where the future is too. So it always makes it interesting.
Oh, definitely. Now here, John, I got a question for you. And any of your listeners, email John what you thought it was. Why was electric cars more popular with women 100 years ago?
Well, I know the answer, but we'll leave that for a little bit later. But yeah, no, that
okay,
was
yes.
Yeah. In fact, Henry Ford's wife drove an electric car, and it wasn't a Ford.
I was at the Greenwich Concours d'Elegance, which is the first Saturday in June in Greenwich, Connecticut, and I had seen it was a Baker Electric, and I remember seeing pictures of this Baker Electric and Floyd Clymer's, I think it's the Good Old Automobiles. Mm. I can't remember the name of the book. But this car was President Eisenhower's mother-in-law's car.
Oh, okay.
And I mean, and it's like, and I remember the photo, as a kid with Eisenhower, you know, and he's kind of like leaning out the window. And now here I am 3 feet away where this great president was sitting, you know, and it's a history lesson. You talk about technology. The old Cadillacs from the 50s, they had that, I think it was called the Magic Eye,
mm-hmm.
so that it would turn your high beams off.
Right.
You know, why don't they have this technology now, you know? It, probably because for some reason the beam counters see it as it costs too much money.
Well, it's interesting. They actually, I'm driving a $19,000 Toyota, and it actually has that technology in it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you do see it a little bit, but you're right. You know, you mentioned the Baker Electric, and the Baker Electric was I borrowed one. I guess I technically rented it from the Lars Anderson Auto Museum up in Brookline for an event, and just the idea that was a really interesting car, and it was like sitting in your living room inside of it.
You know, another thing that's history, if I could just share this very short story. When I get a commission piece of artwork, I like to dive in about the model year of the car, where it was made. If I find advertisements, I look up the address to see if the building's still there. Well, I grew up in New Brunswick, New Jersey. My grandfather worked for International Motor Car Company, which became Mack Truck, from 1919 to 1969.
Mm-hmm.
So just remember that part, okay? Now, I get a commission for a 1916 Simplex, Crane Simplex,
mm-hmm.
which was a very expensive automobile.
Yeah.
It went for around $3,800 and up.
Mm-hmm.
And so whereas Model Ts were going for $400 and $500. So I see I look up and I see an advertisement, showroom, Broadway, New York, New York. And then underneath it, I see manufacturing, New Brunswick, New Jersey. That's like, what?
Hmm.
New Brunswick, New Jersey? Where was this at? So it had taken me 2 weeks to finally locate where the factory was, thanks to Rutgers University's archives, online archives. And remember the old maps?
Mm-hmm.
You would see the map of, Boston or local areas, and they would draw every building in the town, and around the map would be the large corporations that were in the city.
Mm-hmm.
I come across the map of New Brunswick, and there it is, Simplex Motor Car Company. I'm like, holy smoke.
Mm.
And then I look, and there's the map key where it's located. So thanks to Google, I go there, and you ready for this, John? The building's still there.
Wow.
The building is, and now Crane Simplex, now here's the history lesson. Crane Simplex manufactured cars up until the First World War, until the United States bought them. Then they had to stop making cars. Wright Martin, they merge in with Wright Martin Aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
They buy the building. They were making Hispana Azusa engines for the fighter planes. When the war was over, Wright Martin pulls out, and International Motor Car Company, Mack Truck, buys the facility. And I'm like, holy smoke. But the thing is, my grandfather's passed on
mm-hmm.
many years now. But he never told me about these cars.
Mm.
I mean, it must have been a sight to see these cars going around town because of the New Brunswick library, okay? They have online newspapers. The past is alive and well. I'm reading, you know that Crane Simplex had a men's choir, baseball team, soccer team, you're reading about articles about there was a test driver that got killed in New Brunswick because somebody cut him off. Hundreds and hundreds of articles about the Simplex that if you just looked up Simplex New Brunswick, you could hardly find it. And then I found out that many of the streets in New Brunswick are named after famous flyers from the Wright Martin Corporation. And there's even a Simplex Avenue.
Hmm.
So a history lesson.
Yeah, no. Cars are absolutely a history lesson, and when you get to talk like you do, when you get to talk to the people that own these cars, and you get that. And the other thing I always try to tell people, if you're thinking about getting into the old car hobby, go to an auto show and talk to the people that own the car that you have an interest in. So whether it's a Simplex or whether it's a 1965 Thunderbird, go find somebody that has one and say, what should I be looking for? What are the mistakes that maybe you made when you were buying it? People tell you the best way to buy a car is buy one that's all that somebody else already overspent the money on, because you never get the money back. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah,
and also if you're going to restart, if you're going to do a restoration from the ground up, my radio partner Dusty and I always say, make sure you have deep pockets, which means, kid, make sure you have a lot of money, because if you want everything original, it does not come cheap. Chroming on a car is thousands of dollars.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And there's things where you can't do. Maybe you're not equipped to be a painter. Yeah, I mean, you could do engine work, but you can't paint it. You're not trained to be an upholsterer. One of my favorite places I send people is Gateway Classic Cars. I think they got like 12 showrooms. They should give you a drill bib when you look at these cars. But it also gives you an idea as to what's out there. But what I tell people is, don't expect, if you buy a car that's 50 years old, it does not drive like a car from today, because the technology wasn't there yet. Mm-hmm. And there's some people I talk, I was very disappointed. I bought a 68 Camaro, and I found it very stiff. But it's not going to drive like a 2018 Camaro. The technology is totally, totally different. Hmm. You drive a buddy of mine, he restored a 57 Chevrolet Bel Air, and he got the tires from Coker Tire.
Mm-hmm.
And, it was a two-ply tire. And, I mean, it rode hard. He says, yeah, if we had radials on this, it would be like driving on a cloud, But, there's a lot of things that go with it. And, of course, it's the maintenance of the automobile, too. So, there's a lot of different factors. And just like anything, when you're buying a car, have a mechanic go with you. Take a look at this thing. Because on the outside, it may look great, but the inside, to me, I was always told years ago, if the car looked like it was parked next to the Titanic, the engine compartment, walk away.
Yeah.
Because it's, but you'll be very surprised. Now, here's one, John, for your audience. Everybody's in love with, like, the 67 GTO,
mm-hmm.
the 68 Camaro. If you want a 68 GTO or a 67 GTO convertible, it's going to cost you $85,000. But, there's a lot of cars out there that they were, like, I would call mom and dad cars, but they're still beautiful, but they weren't popular.
Right.
My first car, I bought my father's 66 Mercury Monterey. It was a two-door. It was metallic, mm-hmm. Maroon metallic with a black vinyl roof, okay? I love that car. Well, Mercury also made a car called, it was the Park Lane convertible. Now, that car, fully restored, can run from $17,000 to
$27,000. Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you buy a 67 GTO convertible, now you're paying $85,000.
Right.
A Nash Metropolitan. You can pick up a Nash Metropolitan convertible for around $18,000. I mean, it's only got a four-cylinder engine. Your garden tractor could probably go faster than that. But it's a cool little car.
No, they're
Model T.
Yeah, station wagons. Some of the station wagons. Yeah. All of a sudden, they've gained popularity, and something that whether it's a you know, 64 Chevy Nova wagon that people just kind of turn their nose up. Even in 64, I don't even think they liked them. But all of a sudden now, if you can find one and it's in good shape or good restorable shape, it's just kind of a cool car to have.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite station wagons is the Pontiac. I can't remember the model name for the wagon, but it was a 59 Pontiac wagon. Oh my God, this thing seemed like it was 3 miles a
gallon.
But my father had in 1959, he bought a brand new Pontiac Catalina. And that went for $1,975.
Mm.
And it came with a radio and a heater. And
yeah,
that was it. Black wheel tires. And he was so proud of that car, he would always say, "Pepe, this is called a wide track Pontiac." And he always said that.
Yep.
But, you know, these are the things that you remember as a kid. When I took driver's ed, they trained us on brand new 1971 Cutlass, the Cutlass Oldsmobile, and it was a four door. What a beautiful! I would give my eye teeth to have one, even a four door. But you can't touch them because everybody wants the popular car from back in the day.
Yep.
You know.
No, everybody lusts after what they had when you know, or what they couldn't have when they were kids. So you know, as the population, you know, as everybody's getting a little bit older, you know, there's no surprise that the cars of the 50s, 60s, and 70s are getting popular because that age group that couldn't own those cars when they were teenagers suddenly can, and good or bad, it makes them popular. Also, can tend to drive the price up a little bit too. But
oh, absolutely. Now, last Christmas, I was trained how to drive a 1922 Model T Ford.
Yep.
And now I'm 6 feet tall, but it's a very cramped car.
Right.
It's very complicated. And I asked my friend Michael, who owns this car, I said, "Okay, so you get somebody, they're going to be the first person to own a car in their family. Who trained these people how to drive? Because driving a Model T is like driving a farm tractor." And what my friend Michael told me was that people of the day, if they lived in the rural area and they're buying a Model T, they already knew how to drive a tractor, so driving a Model T was pretty easy.
Yeah.
But for me, putting a car in reverse to slow down, John, that goes against.
Yeah, no, doing that with pedals instead of a shifter just is a little bit odd. Hey, Joe, we're running out of time here, but the best way to find you is to find you on Facebook, right, and then just kind of go from there.
Right, it's look for Joe Pepitone. I'm not the ball player. I'm the better looking Pepitone with hair. And my icon looks like a Pepsi bottle cap because I go by Joe Pep. And you'll see all my posts. Please, I miss the Northeast for the fall and sometimes the snow. Don't tell Mrs. Pep.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, I got a yard full of leaves. I'll send you a bag of them.
Oh, and you know what? I'll send you a bag full of magnolia leaves, which falls 12 months of the year.
Yeah.
So we're even. But if you want to watch our show, go to the Big Talker 106.7 FM's Facebook page and go into their videos, and you'll see our Every Car Has a Story logo. And you'll have a good time. Our car shows never get rained out.
There you go. Joe, thanks for taking time out of your Saturday. Go enjoy cars and coffee, and we'll talk soon.
Hey, go Boston.
Boston. All right. Take care, Joe. Bye-bye. That was Joe Pepitone, not the ball player, as he pointed out, the better-looking one. Yeah, I don't know. Why don't we take another break, pay some bills? My name is John Paul. This is the Car Doctor Program. Lines are open now, 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. If you're on hold, we will get to you as soon as we get back.
The 5 o'clock Friday blows. I got to let it go.
welcome back to the Car Doctor Program on AM 950 WROL, the Spirit of Austin, or 100.3 FM, or any way you would like to get through. You can listen and find us no matter, well, all kinds of places. Our phone number is 617-770-3030, 617-770-3030. While Keith is getting the phones all straightened out, I want to talk about the car that got me around last week, and that's the all-new midsize Volkswagen Atlas. It's the first seven-passenger, three-row SUV from Volkswagen. Unless you want to call a Vanagon an SUV, but not really. The Atlas is available in five trim levels, two engines, a 2.2-liter turbocharged four-cylinder and a 3.6-liter V6. The Atlas is available in front or all-wheel drive. Our road test was in the Atlas S with front-wheel drive and the four-cylinder engine. The interior of the Atlas S model is basic but comfortable. The cloth seats look good, are comfortable. The manual driver's seat offers enough adjustments for all drivers to find a comfortable seating position. The passenger seat can only be moved front and back, and the seat back tilted, which my wife and other front seat passengers didn't like. They wanted to move up and down a little bit. If you've been in a Volkswagen in the past few years, all the controls seem pretty straightforward. Simple stocks, buttons, knobs, which I personally find much simpler and less distracting than a touchscreen. Hopefully that phase is gone, that whole touchscreen only. I know Tesla has it and people love it, but it's awful. Although our Atlas didn't have navigation, it did have Apple CarPlay and Android Auto, allowing most smartphones to seamlessly interface with the infotainment system. There's a good sized glove compartment, large center console, bins, cup holders, large door pockets to carry all the junk we need to bring with us when we go places these days. You ever notice people get out of their cars now and there's like, they have, you know, if they're bringing their lunch, they have their lunch, their bag, their other thing, and a cup, because you got to bring water with you, because you know that 7-minute drive to work you might dehydrate it on the way. So so you got to bring that. Like I said, the seats were comfortable. The sliding second row seating is extremely spacious with plenty of head and leg room. The third row seats a bit tight, but can accommodate adults at least for short trips. With all the seats in use, there's about 20 feet of cargo space with the second and third row folded. It's 96 cubic feet of cargo space. That rivals some full-size SUVs. You think a 2-liter engine in a big, heavy SUV doesn't make sense? Well, this 2-liter engine makes 235 horsepower. Merging onto a busy highway or passing a slowly moving truck is drama-free. It's got 258 foot-pounds of torque. I was wondering if I could get this engine out and put it in my wife's Volkswagen. I'm going to add about 50 horsepower. Those drivers wanting more power or needing to tow up to a 5,000-pound trailer, they'll want to opt for the 276-horsepower V6. 0 to 60, both cars are about the same, though. Both engines are connected to a smooth-shifting 8-speed automatic transmission with manual mode. Fuel economy during my time with the Atlas averaged about 23 miles per gallon. Not great, but not terrible. Steering and handling were quite good, more sedan-like than midsize SUV. The ride's generally quite good, but the Atlas can become a bit unsettled over potholes or big pavement breaks, stuff like that. The Atlas is really quiet with almost no wind or road noise. The Atlas by Volkswagen is a midsize SUV that many buyers have been looking for. The seating is comfortable, the ride pleasant, and the interior space versatile and roomy. If you're looking for a long-distance family cruiser, the Atlas by Volkswagen is certainly a vehicle that should be on your shopping list. EPA says 22 city, 26 highway. I averaged about 23 combined. The engine's a 2-liter, 235 horsepower four-cylinder in our test car. And price as tested, $31,675. So there you go. Keith, what are we doing?
Let's see. Where's my microphone? Hi.
You probably need to turn that up. You know, if you're going to talk.
Yes. All right, yes. Bob from Worcester.
All right, let's talk to Bob from Worcester. Bob, is that you? Bob, is that you? Good. There you are.
Yes, hey, John Paul. How you doing?
Good, how are you?
Good. Hey, you had helped me a while back. I got a Mustang. I had a leak on my thermostat, and you suggested putting some baby powder underneath the intake, which actually worked out great because I was able to kind of see if it was leaking after I fixed it. So that, just a heads up,
okay.
That was a great idea.
Well, it's an old timey idea. There's nothing new about that. That's what we used to do back in the old days. In fact, and I don't know why, but for some reason, foot powder was the thing. And I think it was foot powder because that's probably what a lot of guys had in shops that dumped it in their work boots. So you went, you went and stole somebody's foot powder from their locker and used it to try to find leaks in a car. So,
no, that was an excellent idea. I got John Paul. I got two quick questions.
Sure.
One's when I'm coming off the highway, I'm on the Mustangs 05, and I'm at a come off the ramp. I'm at a right, and the idle drops down. In the older cars, we could adjust that idle. What is there any adjustment on the newer cars for an idle?
No, I mean, not really. Once the initial, once it's initially set, it should be pretty much stay where it's supposed to stay. So when you come off the, when you're coming off the highway, if the idle's dropping down a little bit, one of the things it might be is just about every car, including yours, has a, something called an EGR valve. An EGR valve is designed to recirculate exhaust gas. That's what it stands for. And sometimes what happens is they get kind of carboned up. So you take your foot off the gas, you come off the highway, you're on full vacuum, you know, because you're coasting with your foot off the gas. That's when the EGR valve tends to open and it recirculates some exhaust gas to lower, it helps lower the temperature of the catalytic converter, but it also eliminates something called oxides of nitrogen. So, but what can happen is the EGR valve can be a little sticky. So it doesn't, when you come to a stop, now it should completely close back up so it doesn't screw the idle up. And if it's hanging up a little bit open, it'll make the idle a little bit rough, which drops it down a little bit. And even though the car should try to compensate for it, it might not, because maybe The idle control, the idle air control is a little bit sticky. So at one thing you could give it a try, try a couple of tankfuls of a good fuel system cleaner like Tecron or B&G.
Yeah, that actually works fabulous.
Yeah. Try a couple tanks fulls of that and see if it cleans some of the carbon out. If it gets better, it's probably related to either an idle air control motor that's sticky or an EGR valve that's sticky. Pretty much any time you pull a vacuum line off of an intake manifold on a new car, the idle should compensate, and usually it goes a little higher than it should. But if you're coming to a point where it's going a little low, you could have a bit of a vacuum leak that it can't compensate for, and an EGR valve is, EGR valve is a good place to look.
All right, I could do that on a tune-up just to replace it when I'm doing a tune-up.
Well, EGR valve is pretty expensive, so you
are they?
Yeah. So you might want to check first before you replace it.
All right, good. Hey, the other quick question is, I'm doing a cat on a Jeep 03 Liberty on the left hand side, driver's side. I'm changing the front cat, and I know there's a clamp up top. Is there a donut that goes with that clamp?
It's, I think what you're going to see, it's going to look like a steel donut.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's going to look, it's not going to be made out of, like fiber that you used to, like an old car.
It's not like the one at the crossover pipe.
No. I don't think that's what you're going to see. I think you're going to see something, and chances are if it's not broken, it's probably reusable.
Okay, so it should come with the new cat. With
In theory it might. I don't know.
I'll keep an eye on
All right.
Then.
All right, good enough.
Thanks for your help.
All right,
Paul. Great show.
All right, thanks.
All right, bye-bye.
All right, thanks, Bob. 617-770-3030 is our number. Let's go wherever Keith tells us to go now.
Okay, let's see. Rick from Boston.
All right. Hey, we haven't talked to Rick in a whole week now. Rick, is that you?
Yeah, that's me.
What are you doing these? What are you, you're not out riding today. It's way too wet.
No, actually, but I got two things. One, you're just talking about foot powder and that. My son thinks he's got a couple of leaks in his Jeep. What do you do? Just sprinkle it around the valve or whatever?
Yeah. Where you think there's a leak, and what happens is you let it run for a little bit, and then you can see where whatever the liquid is traces, you know, stains the powder.
Okay, good. And
the way people really do it these days is they add a special dye to all the fluids, and then they use an ultraviolet light, dim the lights in the room and, you know, in the garage, and use an ultraviolet light. And when you do that, suddenly you can see where the leak is. But if you don't have dye in an ultraviolet light, a little bit of powder can give you kind of the same idea.
Well, my phone, I have a little problem dimming the sun.
There's that problem, and the powder works. So, you know, go steal some Johnson & Johnson foot powder or something. So.
Yeah. Well, last Sunday, myself and another bike were talking about being weary at times driving this time of year with the wet leaves on the road on our bikes. What effect do they have on cars, if any?
Just like ice. You put wet leaves on top of wet leaves, and then you get water on top of that. You can go around a corner and in a car and have the car slide. And even with electronic stability control, which helps, wet leaves can be really slippery, especially like this morning. It's starting to pick back up again. And the streets are covered with leaves, so even coming to a stop, especially if you're stopping at the bottom of a hill where you need a little bit more brake pressure and a little bit more traction, and if you're stopping on some wet leaves, you're going to lose that traction. You're going to slide right into the car in front of you. So this is one of those times that you normally in the rain you want to keep a little bit more stopping distance, but rain and wet leaves you want to leave even a little bit more. Think of it like snow.
Well, I figured that would be a good thing to talk about today.
I think it was a good idea, Rick. You're always full of good ideas.
my wife says sometimes
we love you, Rick.
A lot of stuff.
All right, Rick. All right, take care.
Bye, John.
Yep, bye-bye. I think, where are we going now, sir?
John Boston.
All right, let's talk to John in Boston. John.
Yeah, hi, John. Good show. I was listening to your guests. And pretty much, I think, car collecting for young people is going downhill. How do they have money? We get massive student loans. I said to a 27-year-old woman the other day, Oldsmobile, she looks at Oldsmobile.
Yeah.
Well, that's like, you don't know how to kill Oldsmobile. They look like that.
Well, it's kind of funny. I was at a Votex school this week, and...
Yep.
We were talking about the trades and how the trades are just screaming for people, whether they're carpenters, electrician, HVAC, CAD/CAM, you know, all kinds of things. And we were talking about a kid getting out of high school and deciding not to go to college, which, you know, some people kind of, you know, look down their nose at that they didn't go to college. And
you're supposed to be a big shot and go to college and get a degree.
Yeah, the idea that you're going to go into almost debt over that, and it can turn into a real problem. And you can leave a Votex school, and I was talking to one of the instructors who worked at a Volkswagen dealer 10 years ago, and he said his average paycheck 10 years ago, and he did it for 10 years, was over $100,000 a year. And he said, well, I went to trade school in Ireland, and he said, I'm not even in a trade. I went to trade school. He said I went to trade school for drafting. And he said, I decided I like doing this better. And he said, it just worked out. So I really believe that, you know, there's certainly, you know, people that go to college, you know, great. But I was talking to Jamie Murphy. He's a state rep, but his family owns Murphy Brothers, the Volkswagen Volkswagen place, and he was saying, you know, he talks to kids all the time now that have $250,000-$300,000 in student debt, and they're starting a job making $25,000 a year, and it's
going to have an okay antique car.
Yeah, they're not going to get an antique car. But there are, you know, still the antique car hobby is fairly strong, not as strong as I think it used to be, but still there's a lot going on with it. So.
Like Harley Davidson. Who wants a Harley Davidson? You know, a $20,000 bike. That's for rich men, you know, in the 50s and 60s.
Well, you gotta wait till they're 8 years old and they're selling for $4,000.
So I see at the swap meets things don't sell anymore. Going to, you know, automotive swap meets. Yeah, so I think it's going downhill pretty much,
yep.
Little by little.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
The millennial Rick and Oldsmobile, they won't even know what you're talking about.
Well, somebody joked with me one time that, and maybe I saw it on the back of a spare tire cover, I think, on a Jeep, and it had a standard shift pattern, and it said millennial anti-theft tool.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. I see that about 6 or 7 years ago, AMC. managerial ambassador, 1700 bucks. The guy just ruined it. He's a young guy. Just, you know, they don't appreciate things like that.
Well,
yeah.
Unfortunately. You know, your grandfather probably said that about stuff you own too.
Well, I got him into it, but I'm hitting, you know, late 50s now, so I remember buying an old car for 1500 bucks, you know, 500 bucks, $1,000. Now you can't even touch them.
Yep. No, yeah. You're absolutely right. Hey, we got to get going.
Oh, thank you.
All right, take care. Hey, look, my producer's suddenly Paul Sullivan. Look at that.
It's me.
Look at that. Look at you sitting
there. How am I doing?
Yeah, what are you doing there?
I don't know.
You need some place to sit?
Well, I Keith got called away on some kind of fake emergency, I think.
Yeah.
He made it back.
Yeah, he did.
Where'd you go? Did you have to go to the bathroom?
Yeah, I did.
See? That happens in radio, folks.
It does. And where are we with, like...
The clock on the wall says it's 8... No.
Hold on. Oh, come on.
9:58.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We never did give away any auto show tickets. If you want them, email me, jpaul@aaanortheast.com, jpaul@aaanortheast.com. I have a few tickets left over for the Connecticut Auto Show. I have a few tickets left. I have some tickets left for the Boston Auto Show. I have a few tickets left RV show too. So I have tickets to give away. Send me an email. Drop me an email. jpaul@aaanortheast.com. I'll get them in the mail to you this week. But right now, the very best in Irish music.
But now you got 40 seconds.
Yeah. So all right.
I don't have any headphones, I can't hear what the.
Yeah.
So what you and me, baby.
Yeah. So what do you got going on with the Irish parade today?
We have rainy day Irish music all day because it's going to rain, and then
so it's
after that it's going to be a big blow.
So it's going to feel like Ireland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's softer rain in Ireland.
Softer rain.
Yeah. But from here, it looks soft enough, right?
Yeah. I think so. I think so. Well.
And I put the soft in Irish music. You know that.
I have no comment to that somehow. But anyway.
There's
hey, coming up next, Paul Sullivan and the Irish Hit Parade, the very best in Irish music, heard here forever. Only on the station. Remember, next week I'm not going to be here, but Buddy Craig Fitzgerald is going to be filling in, so be nice to him when he comes in. He's a good guy. You'll like him. We'll see you. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks. And until next week, wear your seatbelt, drive safely, and be good to your car. Talk to you all next week. Bye-bye.